Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
This is Kalia, and today is Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. The topic of our show today is the attitude of gratitude, and this is part 7 of the summer series, Supercharge Your Inner Chi. When you're in times of extreme loss, grief, and pain, it can be difficult to do anything other than focus on how painful your reality feels. You wake up in the morning in pain, you go through your day in pain, you end your day in pain, and you pray to get out of pain. When you have financial issues, it can be difficult to think of anything other than how you're going to pay your rent or mortgage, or where you're going to get the money for something that you need. When a family member is ill, it can be difficult to look on the bright side. When you are ill, it can be difficult to get through. When your relationship and family is falling apart, it can be all-consuming. So how do we develop an attitude of gratitude when it feels like our world is falling apart? What is there to be grateful for? At times like these, it feels more that we want to curse life rather than thank it. I am one to encourage that we feel all of our feelings, that we're emotionally honest with ourselves and others. If we're emotionally honest, we might have to admit to ourselves that we just feel horrible and don't feel like there is anything good in our lives. When life hands you lemon, it's said that you need to learn how to make lemonade. But how do we find gratitude in the darkness? How can you learn to be grateful for those lemons, knowing they can bring gifts into your life that you can't yet see? In this 12-step programs, there's an opportunity for everyone to share what is going on in their lives. In heart-centered programs, there's an opportunity to share what is on your heart. Sharing your true reality is healing, and it is necessary. It's necessary to feel heard, to allow those who care about you to know you and your challenges. So when we talk about developing an attitude of gratitude, it in no way means that we deny reality and suppress our true feelings. We simply make room for gratitude in the mix. Gratitude can balance out the unfortunate things happening in your life. We can always find something to be thankful for. We may even find something to be thankful for in the actual unfortunate situation itself. If a loved one dies from cancer, for example, people are often thankful that the loved one didn't have to suffer anymore. If you're going through a divorce from a difficult relationship, you might be grateful that you don't have to live with that person anymore, even if there's a part of you that wishes you could still be with that person under better circumstances. If you lost your job, you may be thankful you don't have to work there anymore and welcome a new opportunity. If you're in financial trouble, you can be thankful for what money or abundance does come your way. Developing an attitude of gratitude doesn't mean that you ignore the bad things happening in your life. It means you look for the good things that are happening, or the good in every situation, and try to muster up the actual feeling of being grateful. Seeing the glass as half full means to look for the positive in every situation. This is what gives us hope when we are feeling hopeless. Some people get into the habit of praying every night before going to bed, and even every morning upon awakening. Gratitude can actually be a prayer of its own. You can truly take time each evening and morning to count your blessings. I am thankful for my arms, my legs, my health, the roof over my head, my children, my pets, or whatever it is you can find to be grateful for. Gratitude lifts the spirits and balances out the negativity in your life. It can actually move you from negativity to positivity over time if you develop a practice. In one study on gratitude, Robert A. Emmons, Ph.D. at the University of California, and his colleague Mike McCullough at the University of Miami, randomly assigned participants were given one of three tasks. Each week, participants kept a short journal. One group briefly described five things they were grateful for that had occurred in the past week. Another five recorded daily hassles from the previous week that displeased them. And the neutral group was asked to list five events or circumstances that affected them, but they were not told whether to focus on the positive or the negative. 10 weeks later, participants in the gratitude group felt better about their lives as a whole and were a full 25% happier than the hassled group. They reported fewer health complaints and exercised an average of 1.5 hours more per week. In a later study by Emmons, people were asked to write every day about things for which they were grateful. Not surprisingly, this daily practice led to greater increases in gratitude than did the weekly journaling in the first study. But the results showed another benefit. Participants in the gratitude group also reported offering others more emotional support or help with a personal problem, indicating that the gratitude exercise increased their goodwill towards others, or more technically, their pro-social motivation. Philip Watkins, a clinical psychologist at Eastern Washington University, found that clinically depressed individuals showed significantly lower gratitude, nearly 50% less than non-depressed controls. Dr. John Gottman at the University of Washington has been researching marriages for 2 decades. The conclusion of all that research, he states, is that unless a couple is able to maintain a high ratio of positive to negative encounters, 5 to 1 or greater, it's likely the marriage will end. If you think about it, your tragedy or traumatic story is a story of misfortune. Everybody suffers from misfortune, some more than others. We can't go through life without misfortune. There is death, illness, divorce, betrayal, financial challenges, emotional challenges, and other things that cause us to fall into a low mood. When you fall into a low mood, it can be easy to feel that the world has it out for you and get into self-pity. Why is this happening to me? When you're rooted in self-pity, it can be helpful to read encouraging stories about how other people pulled themselves from similar type circumstances. It shows you that there is life after hardship, even if it doesn't feel like it at the time. Sometimes, in order to develop an attitude of gratitude, it helps to understand that challenges are opportunities to develop spiritually. Western Buddhist master Jack Kornfield says, "In certain temples that I've been to, there's actually a prayer that you make asking for difficulties. May I be given the appropriate difficulties so that my heart can truly open with compassion." Jack Kornfield goes on to say, "If we see the world as sacred, which is an expression of the spiritual life, then gratitude follows immediately and naturally. We've been given extraordinary privilege of incarnating as human beings, and of course the human incarnation entails the 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows, as it says in the Tao Te Ching. But with it, we have the privilege of the lavender color at sunset, the taste of a tangerine in our mouth, and the almost unbearable beauty of life around us, along with its troubles. It keeps recreating itself. We can either be lost in a smaller state of consciousness, what in Buddhist psychology is called the body of fear, which brings suffering to us and to others, or we can bring the quality of love and appreciation, which I would call gratitude, to life. With it comes a kind of trust. I watched a video of a man telling his story on the website gratitude.com, and he was the sole survivor of a hotel that collapsed in the Haiti earthquake, and tells the story of his despair of finding himself trapped in the wreckage of a hotel, not knowing if he would live or die. At some point, he prayed and asked God for help. His prayer was not asking to be rescued, but that God's will be done. After he prayed, he heard a voice that said, "Worship me," which meant, "Put your faith in me." Trusting that the outcome was in God's hands brought him a sense of peace, even though he had times of great despair. During times of despair, it's important to develop trust that there is a purpose for your suffering or a blessing in your suffering. There is an opportunity to seek the light in the darkness. The man in the collapsed hotel had to seek the light in the darkness, in the darkest of situations, even knowing that the outcome might be death for him and the loss of a husband and father to his family. He trusted that if his death be the will of God, that he must also trust God to take care of his family. Sometimes when the painful situations you find yourself in are so deep and dark that you have no clue what to do, it's time to turn it over to a higher power, to pray, to develop trust that there is something larger than your small self at work here. And everybody has their own way of communicating with the divine. They have their own belief system, and whatever your belief system is okay. When you feel the most disconnected to source and are in your darkest moments, this is when you need to ask for guidance the most. When I work with people going through the dark night of the soul, they often tell me how their relationship with God or the divine source feels almost non-existent. It can feel as if they've been abandoned by God, left alone in their darkness and despair. And this is where developing trust comes in. In our darkest times, we must learn to trust there is a reason for our pain. When I was going through my dark night of the soul, one of several, the pain felt unbearable at times. I was deeply torn. I was suffering from the pain of betrayal and the pain of a higher truth trying to find its way into my life. I resisted that truth. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to see it. But I knew on so many levels the truth would set me free. Those times are behind me now. And recently I heard a friend tell me, the narcissistic men in your life were removed so that you could have greater love in your life. And that pulls it all together. That makes sense. Sometimes in relationships we have the experience of a person being very quickly taken from our lives, being evicted from our lives, disappearing, abruptly leaving, and it can leave us with a deep pain trying to sort it all out. But sometimes we need to look at those abrupt departures as a blessing, even though we have to experience the emotional fallout. Because what is really happening is room is being made in our lives for a greater kind of love, for a greater relationship. Most people that experience abrupt departures, unless it's a death of a loved one, if you experience somebody leaving, somebody having an affair, so finding out somebody is narcissistic, sociopathic, anything like that, it really is a blessing to have that person removed from your life. Even though you still have to go through that adjustment period, you have to go through the grieving period, you have to go through the healing period. In the end, when you get out from the other side of the tunnel, you will be able to see the blessing in that situation. On so many levels in my experience, I knew it was a blessing, but it felt good to be reminded. During the time of my greatest suffering, it felt like a curse to have the man I loved ripped from my life, leaving me with the deep feelings of betrayal and abandonment. In my small self, the only solution I could see was for God to fix the man in my life so he could be in my life in a better way. But this was not God's plan for me. It was God's plan to move these men out of my life rather abruptly so that I could suffer the pain of loss, abandonment, and betrayal, which resulted in my learning to love myself on deeper levels, which ultimately results in my accepting a deeper level of love in my life. Often when we find ourselves all alone in the world, we feel it is a curse, when really it can be an opportunity to shift the dynamic of the type of relationship we've been getting involved in. Heartbreak can be an opportunity to learn, to grow, to expand, and to prepare ourselves for greater love. Because our highest truth in most relationships is a desire to have a great love. A love where that appreciation is expressed on a daily basis. A love where that gratitude is part of the relationship. If the person that we're with is not capable of loving us the way we desire, wouldn't it make sense that God would intervene and move that person out of our lives? Especially if we ourselves feel too weak to make the decision. The decision just might be made for us. In the case of narcissistic abuse, many people wonder why they don't hear from that person or see that person, or why that person doesn't come back and make amends. What if there's actually divine intervention at work here? Have you ever thought of it this way? What if your higher self knows you are weak and cannot say no to that person's manipulations, and so that person is simply removed from your life? What if another man or woman is put in that person's life as a distraction to keep him or her from coming back? You may be suffering the pain of losing that person in your life, but the highest good for you is to move on to greater love, one where there is honesty, trust, communication, and real love. What if this is your true destiny, but you're resisting your destiny because you think it should look another way? We have to learn to trust that there's a force more powerful than our small selves at work in our lives. The more we can surrender to that force, the more trust and peace we can have in our lives. Jack Kornfield says once again, "I remember my meditation master in the jungles of Thailand who would ask at times, 'Where have you learned more compassion? Where have you learned more? Where has your heart grown wiser? In just having good times or going through difficulties?'" It is the difficulties in life that strengthen the spirit. It is often in the times of our greatest darkness that we seek after the light. In my own experiences of traversing the dark night of the soul, I experienced some of the most spiritually rich times in my life. They were times when all distractions in my life were removed because I was in too much pain to be distracted from it. I could understand the need for addictions because our addictions distract us from our pain. I remember wishing I had an addiction powerful enough to distract me from my pain. But I also remember finding the wisdom to know that I was exactly where I needed to be. Pain is something we're conditioned to run from, to escape, and to suppress. We don't often consider the gift of actually embracing our pain and asking God or higher self to help us to find the gift in our pain, help us to learn the lessons, and become a better person as a result. Often during the dark night of the soul, all the stops are pulled out. The things that once worked for us no longer work. The addictions that once helped us to numb our emptiness, our deep loneliness, our discontent, no longer do the job. We're left with no powerful method of medicating our disconnect from life, so we must feel it. We must experience it full on. There's actually a gift in having to feel our pain fully. Although for most of us, it doesn't feel like a gift. It feels like a curse. It feels awful. We pray for numbness. We pray for escape. But our higher self knows that the way to enlightenment is to embrace our inner darkness, embrace our shadow, and find the gifts in our pain. When we're in the deepest pain of our life, this is the time to say, "Thank you for my pain." I know it sounds crazy. Why would we want to be grateful for our pain? Because we must learn to trust that our pain can be our greatest teacher. It brings to us our greatest lessons. It refines us. It makes us whole. It causes us to dig deeper. And so, we learn to be with it, rather than try and escape it. We develop greater strength and tolerance. Our addictions are how we mask our pain. They're how we escape. But once we can learn to be with our pain, to embrace it and tolerate it, we no longer depend upon those addictions to mask it. The best way to heal addictions is to feel our pain, to learn how to be with it. Instead of praying to be lifted from pain, try and pray for guidance to see in the dark, and pray for tolerance to be with the pain, and pray for strength to learn the lessons the pain has to teach you. I often talk about resistance. What you resist persists. When we resist something, we're constantly pushing it away, trying to suppress it. We struggle against it and fight it. But when we surrender to it and stop resisting, we can step into a new experience. When I first started working as a counselor, I wanted to take people out of pain. I was constantly on the lookout for new tools and techniques to help people to get out of pain. At one point, during my own dark night of the soul, I came to understand that I had to stop trying to lift people from their pain and instead help people to be with their pain, to stop resisting it, to walk into it and confront it. If someone was feeling deep sadness or desperation, I ask them to voice their feeling over and over again. I feel sad. I feel desperate. This helps to open the floodgates and allow that emotion to pour out and be felt and expressed. Once we stop resisting the emotion, it can be embraced and thereby released. We surrender to it, walk into it, and let it move through us. The result is that the pain eventually runs its course and we begin to feel better. But we don't feel better by running from the pain. We feel better by running to it, by allowing it. Allowing your pain is not the same as wallowing in it. Self-pity is not the way to enlightenment. You must be able to recognize the difference between wallowing in self-pity and expressing your pain from a deep place within you. Expressing pain is a way of releasing it, where wallowing it is a way to keep it alive and taking up space in your life. Self-pity is a victim's playground. We can all be victims of abuse or crime, but once that crime or abuse has ended on the physical level, it's time, and we're grown up, of course, we're over 18, it's time to take responsibility for our own experience of being on the receiving end of that abuse and heal it from the inside out. I often use the rape victim as an example. You don't want to blame the victim. You don't want to tell the woman who's been brutally raped that she's created her reality or she's just being a victim. You don't want to tell her to think positive or be grateful for her rape. You may help her to be thankful. You may tell her that you're thankful that she survived. But you don't want to say you should be thankful. Instead, say, I'm so grateful that you're alive. That rape was a brutal and violent crime, and the victim likely has a lot of feelings about what happened to her. Her healing will involve working through her feelings and allowing them. If she tries to escape them or pretend everything is okay, she'll likely have to turn to some kind of addiction to suppress the pain of her experience. It may be hard for the rape victim to see the good, look for the bright side, and practice any kind of gratitude. At first, it can be really difficult, and she'll have to come to it in her own time. She may eventually begin to also feel grateful she survived it, even if there's a part of her that wishes she didn't. The rape may have changed her in such a way that she can't live the same way she once did, and eventually, she may be grateful for the change, because she may start to live more authentically. More honestly, she may become a counselor and work with rape victims because she knows firsthand what they go through on an emotional level. Or she may become a police officer who tracks down rapists, or an attorney who prosecutes them, or a self-defense trainer who helps women to protect themselves. Her life may take on a deeper meaning as a result of her trauma. It may have taken such a trauma to wake her up from her formerly meaningless or empty life experience. She may not even have realized her life was meaningless prior to that rape. She may have broken up with her current mate because he couldn't be with her in her pain. She may have come to realize how shallow her relationship was or how unethical her work environment was and seek a deeper experience of life. In the early stages of trauma, it may be difficult to feel our gratitude for the experience, but at some point, it can be part of the healing experience to look for the good that is coming out of it, even if it is something very small. Eventually, such as in the case of the rape victim, she may come to be grateful for how that rape changed her life and gave it greater meaning and purpose. Practicing gratitude in relationships is important to the survival of the relationship. Studies have shown that giving and receiving gratitude in relationships actually boost oxytocin levels, improving relationships and keeping couples together. Gratitude is the glue. The more the couple expressed gratitude is something the other does for them, at something the other does for them, the happier the couple is. Studies also show that the most successful leaders are the leaders that express gratitude for their followers and make them feel good about themselves. In a study in a camp of children with illnesses such as celiac disease and in different kinds of intestinal disorders. One of the camp leaders created a gratitude jar out of an old mayonnaise jar and encouraged the children and camp leaders to write down something they were grateful for that another person at camp did for them. The notes were read at mealtime. The notes went from only two at the very first meal to several hundred per mealtime. The moral attitudes and behavior of the children were much improved, and incidences of bullying, arguing, and conflict between children were almost non-existent. The focus of the camp was turned to looking for things in each other to be thankful for. There's an article written by Don Hooser, What Happy People Have in Common, Gratitude. He goes on to say, ingratitude is probably the most prevalent sin. It is easier to wallow in pity than feel appreciation. It seems easier to criticize than compliment. Griping, grumbling, and being grouchy are just doing what comes naturally. They are part of our negative, self-centered human nature. On the other hand, gratitude is known as the mother of all virtues. That makes sense. Gratitude, a grateful attitude, inspires and leads to other good attitudes. It's hard to have a BA, a bad attitude, when you're feeling grateful. The reverse is also true. One BA leads to another's BA. Just like one sin leads to other sins. Self-pity, selfishness, and self-centeredness, negativism, pessimism, suspicion, cynicism, and a victim mentality are polar opposites to gratitude, and they're major robbers of happiness and contentment. Life has its ups and downs. Most situations have their advantages and disadvantages. So every person can choose whether he will focus on the half-full glass or the half-empty glass. The first group will be most happy, and the second group will be most unhappy. Gratitude in the face of abuse, trauma, and unhappiness can help people to develop a positive attitude and heal much more quickly. It pays to develop a daily ritual of gratitude. Hold an attitude of gratitude. Having an attitude of gratitude can help us to come to forgiveness for those who have hurt us and betrayed us. We can develop an understanding that it is the pain, the suffering, and the weakness in that person that causes him or her to do what he or she does. We don't excuse the behavior, of course, but we develop an understanding that helps to set us free from harboring a long-term grudge or resentment, or being a long-term victim. Coming to forgiveness of our perpetrator can really free up our energy and bring us greater happiness. Gratitude helps us to come to forgiveness. Sometimes when we simply find things to be thankful for about what resulted from the relationship or breakup, we can forgive the person who brought harm to us. Because through that harm, we evolved to a happier, healthier, more whole version of ourselves, or we've learned a lot about ourselves, or we've found much more loving relationships as a result. And sometimes when I talk about finding more loving relationships, I'm not just talking about that significant other. How many of you who are listening have let go of a lot of your relationships when you had a significant other that seemed to demand all of your time, energy, and attention? It's as if you didn't have time, energy, or attention or for another relationship, for your friends, for your family, to nurture new relationships. And so you put all your focus on this one person, and when that one person exited your life, you didn't have any relationships left. And so once you find yourself alone, after you go through the initial healing phase, you might begin to start reaching out and developing new friendships. You might start nurturing greater relationships with family members. And so you find that you have a lot more love and friendship in your life. And that's really a necessary part of becoming whole. We don't want to just go out there and seek one significant person when we're feeling lonely. We want to open up our entire world. We want to invite lots of people in that can share our reality. And we want to invite those people in that we can truly appreciate, that we really do appreciate, that we feel good about, that do nice things for us, that we can express our gratitude for. So it may take time to get there, but when we can release a person from any need to have them be accountable or make right, we can free ourselves from seeking after something we're never likely to get. So that's part of the forgiveness process. Instead, we must learn to give it to ourselves. I'm so sorry this happened to you. You never deserved it. You deserved to be loved and cared for. You deserved to be appreciated for all the good things that you do. You deserve to be acknowledged, respected, and treated with kindness. I'm so sorry that he couldn't do that for you, or she couldn't do that for you. But I will do that for you. I will tell you every day something I am grateful for about you. And if each one of you listening can do that for yourself. Sometimes when you're finding it difficult to feel gratitude, it can be helpful to read inspirational stories. I found this one beautiful story about a female humpback whale who had become entangled in a spider web of crab traps and lines. She was weighted down by hundreds of pounds of traps that caused her to struggle to stay afloat. She also had hundreds of yards of line rope wrapped around her body, her tail, her torso, a line tugging in her mouth. A fisherman spotted her just east of the Farallon Islands outside the Golden Gate and radioed for help. Within a few hours, the rescue team arrived and determined that she was so badly off, the only way to save her was to dive in and entangle her, a very dangerous proposition. One slap of the tail could kill a rescuer. They worked for hours with curved knives and eventually freed her. When she was free, the divers say she swam in what seemed like joyous circles. She then came back to each and every diver, one at a time, nudged them, and pushed gently, thanking them. Some said it was the most incredible, beautiful experience of their lives. Stories like the story of the humpback whale can help us to feel gratitude for the good in the world, for the miracles and the heartwarming stories that others are recounting. There are some different places that you can go for inspiration. storiesofgratitude.com, gratefulness.org, and even the Chicken Soup for the Soul books have a lot of heartwarming stories. Stories can remind us that there are miracles happening every day in the world. If all you do is watch the news, you're going to be inundated with bad news. And so it's important to go looking for good news. I encourage people who have made it through narcissistic abuse, come out the other side and feel positive about their lives, come back and share their story. I'm not really interested in hearing more stories of abuse. I've had enough of those to last a lifetime. I want to hear stories of how people overcome their abuse. As an abuse counselor, people are often chomping at the bit to share their horror stories with me because they know I'll understand and being validated is important, and I do understand. And when I counsel somebody, I listen to those stories, and I validate those stories. But honestly, I can't build my life around daily horror stories. I need the inspiration. I need people to share how they pulled through and what they're grateful for. And I do get these stories, too. I get daily emails sharing stories of abuse, and I get daily emails telling me how my work has saved someone's life or helped them to recover. And it is these stories that keep me going with my work. They keep me positive. They show me the other side. They show me what comes from this work that I do. So I invite every one of you who are living a story of abuse to imagine writing your story of success, the story of how you take this experience and begin expressing gratitude for what was good in your life and what you still had to be thankful for, and how that attitude of gratitude pulled you forward and helped you to recreate a life filled with love and happiness. I invite you to imagine telling me your story, to even sit down with a pen and paper and write it right now, as if you were 2 years in the future. Never say to yourself or anyone else, my life has been destroyed, because you'll live out that destruction. Instead, say, my slate has been wiped clean. I now have a blank canvas in which to recreate my life the way I truly want it to be. Get into the habit of saying at least three things you're grateful for every morning when you wake up and every night before you go to bed. Practice developing the attitude of gratitude. When living in the attitude of gratitude, you're living in love rather than fear. Appreciation rather than negativity, inspiration rather than aggravation. Be true to what is good in your life, and the good will increase tenfold. I'm now opening the lines for callers. You can call in at 347-826-9626. That's 347-826-9626. And we've got a caller from area code 845.
Hi, Kalia. It's Georgie.
Hi, Georgie. I keep thinking that that's you when I see that 845.
Yeah.
Hudson, how are you doing?
Valley of New York State. You triggered a few memories and thoughts, and I just thought I would, you know, I'm going to have to try to compress quite a lot of things. But I think my greatest breakthrough in my darkness, and I was with a narcissist, didn't know anything about that, but in the darkness of that situation, abuse. And I didn't even know I was being abused because I was being told it was all my fault, of course. You know how
of
that
course.
Goes.
Yes.
Well, anyway, in the middle of all that, at one point I just looked up. And in the spirit, I saw what I would call God or the Lord, whatever that was to me, smiling. So it was a spiritual experience. And I said, well, why are you smiling while I'm down here in this situation? And and it was like the Lord said to me, I'm inviting you to come up with me and where it's better. And he said, every time he hurts you, he hurts me. When I heard that, it changed my whole view on everything around. It was at that point I could realize, rather than worrying about pleasing someone you couldn't please or feeling sorry for their poor condition that made them do horrible things, I really just had to get away from that and, in
of course,
a sense, put a shield between myself and that for my own health. And,
yeah.
And all. Anyway, so believe me, it was a long time because there wasn't much knowledge about it, so you're just plodding through it, you know. But anyway, I'm going to fast forward to a very recent situation where I live in a place where there are apartments, where there are a lot of people, and we have this addicted smoker, speaking of addictions. I mean addicted where they will sit on the same stool hour after hour and puff away. And it was, it's unpleasant for others. Other people who've smoked have been considerate and moved away from people around. But this is like somebody attached to this addiction like you wouldn't believe, like a wart on your body or something that you can't get off. And it's puzzled me and whatever. Well, just the other day I said, oh, I just saw it in the spirit. This person is holding on to an anger, and anger and blame. And I think anger and blame are things we should become more aware of, whether we're abused or if it's the abuser, which we know there's a lot less hope for them immediately. But the anger was in the flame of the cigarette. And the blame was the smoke going out and ruining everybody's day that was anywhere near them. And it took me a year to really see that, for that to become clear, that this was that thing operating. But I've seen that before with anger and blame. If you get yourself locked into something where you always have to blame, it might be the other person's fault. But you don't need to stay chained to it. You're so much more beautiful than that, and you just really need to fly away and find that beauty. And you don't find it by staying close to those things. And I guess that's kind of what I wanted to say.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and another thing is that, you know, we all have to use our own sense here, but when I talk about practicing gratitude and appreciation, some people may get stuck in staying in an abusive relationship because they're saying, well, I appreciate this about that person, and I appreciate that, and I'm just going to focus on what's good, and I'm not going to focus on the abuse. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily work in an abusive situation, as we really do. We are going to be better off removing ourselves from that abusive situation.
I think that's the first thing, and then maybe have the grace to. But they'll take advantage of your goodwill. That's the problem.
Right. That's the thing. So you have to practice common sense in what you're hearing me, in what everyone's hearing me say about practicing gratitude.
Well, spiritually and higher knowledge, of course, we can be grateful, but not for the perpetrator of the evil in that sense, but in the bigger picture, which is not on that person is not God. They're not controlling the bigger picture. In the bigger picture, God is a good God. So we can be grateful, but we don't need that link to the trouble. We have trouble with us, but we have to learn how to handle it, and basically you can't, so you want to get away from it.
Well, I like what you say, Georgie, about having, you know, heard this voice of, I want you to come here where I am.
Oh, yeah.
Because when he hurts you, he hurts me. Where did you find that was, that place?
That just
where
came
God
by
was.
The grace of God. I've been praying. I've been suffering. I didn't know what to do. I felt obligated. You know, I was married, little baby, and on. And I just felt I should be doing my part to be a good person in that. But it wasn't this person. No one realized how destructive they could be on the inside. It wasn't really immediately obvious. So I just felt locked into something horrible, and I was young, and I really didn't hear anything about abuse, and I didn't have any idea what to do, but I was a praying person. I was, you know, I really was seeking a spiritual comfort or whatever, and then just, boom, there it was, and I was different from then on. I was like, I'm out of here, basically. It was like, okay, all the preparation began for me to find someplace else to be. And, you know, it's been a long haul, but it's fine. I mean, I'm good. You know, I'm a happy camper. And their problem is their problem. And
And you can now write the story of your success.
Yeah. I'm just happy to be free and be able to follow greater wisdom. I'm constantly seeking it. I don't know everything. I know that I'm a contingent being trying to follow the best things that humanity can be offered. And that's my choice. And those things usually turn out to lead to better things. And I just leave the darkness alone. I don't feel obligated to do anything about it unless it wants to do something about itself, which usually it doesn't. So it's not my problem.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. How long have you been free of this?
Well, that was back in 1978, 79.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I just had my 68th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, but I've been seeking a whole bunch of stuff before then, really, even back to the late 60s. And, you know, I had just gotten entangled in that. But I was really a spiritual seeker, a la the 60s. I wasn't a druggie or anything. We had all that meditation stuff coming. I didn't know what I was seeking, but I was.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, you know, it's kind of all the best of everything just has pulled together for me. And I choose the best and hold on to the best. And we can treat ourselves to that. I don't feel obligated to go down someone else's dark hole. I feel sorry for them if they won't let go of driving negativities because they're keeping themselves there. And all I can do is pray and set an example, you know.
Yeah, that's
beautiful. That's all I know. But God is good. Yeah. I mean, a long time. So many good things God will bring you. You have to make space for it. That's all. Believe Him and go for it and make room for it. And it's really good.
Thank you, Georgie. I'm always grateful for your coming on and sharing.
I do when I can. I try to listen live when I can.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. And so, practicing the attitude of gratitude. Is there anybody else that would like to talk? 347-826-9626. And I think that's about it. You have to press number 1 on your keypad if you would like to talk. That alerts me that you have a question. I really like this topic. This is a great topic to be in the energy and attitude of gratitude, and it's something I'm always having to be aware of, always having to practice. But I do see myself as a glass half full kind of person. I do try to look for the positive, and as I said in the talk, even when I'm in pain, I try to look for the good. And so I know that that option is there for all of us, and we can progress and we can recover and heal so much quicker when we can bring gratitude into the picture. So, you know, just count your blessings and maybe write that story, that success story. And if you feel inclined, go ahead and share it with me. I'd be happy to read some of the success stories on the air in future shows. Meanwhile, take really good care of yourself, and we shall see you next week. Bye-bye.